called Sophie. She's 19. She studies politics. And we had a nice chat about Oxford. And after a while, she said, "By the way, what do you do?" And I answered that I am a speechwriter. She looked at me, took a bit of time, like, what is this weird animal? And she said, "You know what? I think you are the first speechwriter I meet." And I said to her, "You know what? I might be the last one." And I thought, am I a dinosaur? Or am I just depressed because I turned 44 a week ago? Maybe both. Anyway, I just want to tell you a paradox. Where I come from, in France, a bit like in England, by the way, where's my friend? Yes. We have things in common, even though the Battle of Azincourt didn't go so well. Well, what we have in common is that we love words. What we have in common is that we love eloquence. And I love Churchill and Speaker Corners as well as I love De Gaulle and our tradition of speaking, which is more and more important in France. There is a big phenomenon, and Anne would probably agree with me, that we teach rhetoric more and more in universities, and we can be proud of that. But the paradox is that speechwriters are seen in my country as secretaries most of the time, or eternal students with big glasses like your dad, Malika, and that some of us here. Eternal students staying till midnight in very little offices with no window, and that will probably die alone with cats. And this is true and not true. And often enough, there is no French word for what we do. When I have to talk about my job, I say, with a very big smile, "Je suis plume." And nor my baker or banker understand. And they say, "Can you repeat, please?" After a while, they understand. And sometimes they add this terrible command. "Well, when will you write a novel by your own or a proper book to become a writer? When?" And sometimes with a slight air of disgust, they add, "Isn't it awful to write for others? Do they really need you? Are they not genius enough to do it by themselves?" And I think into myself, no, I love my job. I love to whisper ideas. I love to inspire people. I admire them. I even sometimes love my clients in the way that we become a team. But I must say, it's not obvious. It's not obvious for the others, and sometimes it's not obvious for all of us. And when you ask a kid, "What do you want to do when you will be big?" they might say, "Fireman, Superman, or rich," which is desperate. But they will never say, "Oh, Mom, I want to be a speechwriter." And if it happens to you, you should be worried. And fortunately, you're not a speechwriter. So maybe it's not obvious because we're not born speechwriters. We become one. And in my case, it happened quite young. I was 12. I used to live in a big building in the center of Paris, and I had a lot of cousins in the building. And they had a lot of babies, so I had a lot of job in terms of speech writing. They came to declare their love to women, and I had no idea what love was, but I did it, writing things coming from the heart. And my specialty was funerals, because there were a lot of funerals, like in every big family. And my specialty was to make people laugh in funerals. And indeed, it's not a classical job if I say, "You know, my job in a very big dinner is to make people laugh in funerals." They think, "My God, she has a big problem." But you know what? My revenge is that to listen to all my cousins cry, and my revenge was not to be paid, but to make a bit of joy during those funerals, because people were old and they had a funny life. So this is how everything started. Of course, my parents couldn't believe I would earn my life with that, and they were pretty right. So I started studying like all of you. I studied literature with passion. I studied business with passion. And then I did a PhD, and I started dying because I was not able to be happy only with books. This is my nature. Some have got other interests. Anyway, I was not able to convince the wall of my library. I was not able to convince a book. I needed a public for that. And that's how I decided to go from teacher to speechwriter. And this is the beginning of the adventure. Yet, it was not only about willing to be a speechwriter. I needed to train, I needed to learn, and not only by reading books. I needed experience. And I created 13 years ago, a company of speechwriters called Coup de Plume. Don't ask me to translate, it's impossible. I give that, but it's delicate. Impossible to translate. Anyway, why this word? Because I know that having words is having weapons. Having words is having the power to change things, even though you don't always change them. Anyway, I created this company, and I had a big privilege to work with CEOs, different CEOs, not the Shell CEO like you, Michel, but other CEOs in different sectors, in different fields. In, for instance, the energetic field, with a fantastic woman called Isabelle Cocher, who's a big lady in the sense that she has decided to stop producing charbon. How do you say charbon?
Coal.
Thanks very much. Which is very courageous, and she has a vision. I had the privilege to work in the food industry with a man who had no diploma at all, and we were a fantastic team because I had some diploma, he had no diploma, he was more a philosopher than me, and he had a practical approach I really liked. I had the privilege, and I have the privilege, to keep working for big CEOs in France, such as in public transportation, a woman like Catherine Guillois, who is the president of RATP Group, you know, the subway, electric vehicles and all that. They do a lot, and I admire this lady a lot. And I think it's very important as a speechwriter to admire your boss and to know him or her pretty well. And one of my clients had a big impact on me. You probably know his face, not necessarily for good reasons. Here it is. His name is Carlos Ghosn. Carlos Ghosn has taught me a lot. I worked for him during 2.5 years, and I'm proud to have worked for him. Now he's under a trial in Japan. It's complicated. I'm not a judge, so I won't say anything. But it was very, very interesting to work for this leader of the leading company of vehicles in the world. What did I learn? I learned that you need to know your boss to work with him and be a good speechwriter, because of course it's a human link. I learned that you don't need at all to be a specialist of your subject. When I met Carlos Ghosn the first time, he said, "Well, what can you tell me about vehicles?" And I said, "Well, nothing. I don't have a vehicle." And he said, "Are you sure you are here at the good place? Are you the one I should see?" And I said, "Yes, I'm so sorry about it, but it's me." And then I had a second opportunity to win the job. And he said, "So, what is according to you the future of vehicles?" And I said, "Well, I think there is no future." So the guy thought, "Oh my God, what's happening?" And I added, "No, there is no future for gasoline vehicles, but maybe for different ones." And that was the beginning of the great adventure of electric vehicles And this guy had a vision, and I helped him very humbly to express that vision. I also learned that it was much more easy to write a very boring, very, very boring long speech rather than a quick, peppy one, which is a lot of work. The shorter it is, the more difficult it is, of course. So I learned a lot. And day after day, month after month, CEO after CEO, speech after speech, I got a little bit more of know-how, as we all do in this room. It takes time, you have to be humble. You never repeat, you can never copy. You need to do it again, again, and again, like Penelope with her wig, doing again, again, the same work and never the same work, because it's never the same subject. So I ask myself and I ask to you, do we have a future? Of course, I'm very positive, and even though I am a dinosaur, like probably you, but very sweet dinosaur, I must say. Well, I think we have a future, but the question is to be or not to be, which means, of course, not only Shakespeare, but what type of speechwriter do you want to be? With Carlos Ghosn and others, I learned that I wanted to be a speechwriter with a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of humility, a lot of capacity to ask myself what is the good way, and always ask myself questions. And I think the other question is, how do we become sustainable speechwriters? How do we remain appealing in a world where things are changing so fast? In a world where, you're totally right, my friend, 3,000 years after, we're still here, bodily expressing things, and it's probably the best way to communicate. Yet, things are changing. Yet, digital voice is a reality. Yet, we have to adapt constantly. And moreover, artificial intelligence is able to do very good speech. And I think we might be very easily replaced. So, what is our adding value? What is a strength? Of course, the answer is not a recipe, even though I like to make cake. So I suggest to do a cake with me and to share together a few tips. Some of them, you know them by heart. Others might be different from your approach. And of course, it is complementary to what you do and what you think. So let's start with the first ingredient. The first one is, of course, culture. It is like the foundation of your house. You know, when I meet a client, because I'm a flying speechwriter, oh sorry, I didn't say it, I'm very unfaithful. I'm in love, but unfaithful. What does it mean? It means that I change from a client to another, because I think it's the best way for me to learn. And sometimes I work for one and for others at the same time. Of course, I can't have 20 person at the same time. But, for instance, now I work 3 days a week for Catherine Guillois at the RATP, and the 2 other days, or let's say, to be honest, the 4 other days, I work for others. And it helps me thinking, because I make links. And talking about links, when I see another client, you know, you need to reassure the people you're working for. Because they're not kids, but they need reassurance. Anne talks about safety, it's true. And they need to feel they are in good hands. And for that, when I tell them I had the chance, for instance, to teach at Cambridge. Sorry, I pronounced the other place. Well, when I tell them I did that, they are reassured. They think, oh, she has the passport. Come in. They don't give me the keys until I prove I can do it. But they open the gate. And after, if I do my job well, they open the house and give me the keys. Yet, culture is the foundation. When I say culture, I mean, of course, mastering classics, knowing history, being able to find a good reference, even though it's not enough, because it's not enough to say, I will be back. You need to pronounce it well to make sure they understand. But still, you need to
a good knowledge of things, mastering classics, and at the same time being very open-minded, connected to what's happening, listening to what your teenager daughter tells you about the new trends of music. Because if you don't know that, you will become a real dinosaur. And I really believe it's a mixture between books and going to a football game and going to the opera and going to Oxford, which is very eccentric for me, and all that. And at the same time, being always open-minded, as an alert, with big ears, because otherwise you can take the risk of being very, very, very dépassé.
Dépassé.
How do you say it?
Out of date.
Yes, out of date. So that's the beginning. Another ingredient is, of course, to master codes, but go and break the codes. Why? Because, of course, there are codes. There are codes to write a good speech, like you start strong, you start with a conclusion, you make short sentence, you repeat, you are clear, you make it simple. Okay, that's the recipe. But I need to imagine new things. I remember a good speech by a woman who is, I lost her name. She's the director of the EFEMI, help me.
Christine
Lagarde. And Christine Lagarde had a speech to do, to give a decoration. You know, French have a big problem, they love decorations. They would die and kill mother and dad and sisters and brothers to get a little decoration. It's a piece of little red thing or blue, but that makes them crazy. It's more than an erotic novel. And so it's a lot of our job to write for them about decoration. And it's usually the same boring way, like you say, when you give it the decoration, you have to repeat always the same procedure, which is about saying all your life career, and you add a bit of human at the end, let's add a personal touch, and you say, and by the way, you love your wife, and you do sport, and you love Pavarotti. And it's always the same, and it's always boring. And so Christine Lagarde suddenly decided she would make rhymes and just go through another way to do it and kill the chronology, and that was great, that was super. So yes, you have to jump to the other piece of water and try and take risks, as one of you said just before. What else? Well, of course, La Fontaine was right. You can't be an oak. You need to be a reed, because when there is a tempest, you are still there. A lot of dinosaur, very flexible, doing sport. What does it mean? It means that, of course, the future super speechwriters, I think, have to be more than speechwriters. They have to constantly master new tools to provide new services, even though you cannot be what you're not. Even though you have to stay focused. But conviction is such a wide range. Some of us can use neuroscience. Some of us will use leadership training to be sure the people we are working with are good speech, not speech writers, but are good, speakers. We have to train them. And that's what I experience every day. I have to learn every day, like you, to be sure I'm up to date and to be sure I provide them new ways of being excellent in their conviction power. And that's how I, of course, work with them, doing media training, working on the body, working on their voice, and sometimes, of course, working with other people that are specialists of the subject. But I think the ability to adapt is key. Cultivate emotional intelligence is, of course, a big necessity. Why? Because you said it, sir. Or maybe not you, but you said a very interesting thing, so my head is dancing. But what I mean is that some of you, one of you said, talking about Mérabian, we convince with brain and we convince with body a lot. And I believe it's not only about emotions, it's about everything you say. You have to to look at people in the eyes. You have to be with them. Otherwise, you lose them. That's why we have to cultivate that emotional intelligence. Of course, it means also having empathy. It means also listening before talking. And what's happening for me more and more is that I prepare a speech, but the reality of the situation is never what I have prepared. In other terms, they have to deliver, but suddenly, imagine, fire is coming. I have to adapt. I have to change my speech, maybe tell you, well, I suggest we finish and go out. So this is reality. Or suddenly, the image doesn't work. You have to make something of it. So we constantly have to be able to listen to the situation. And I believe that in this time of change, where everything changes all the time, everything goes very fast, it's also very important that the leaders we are working for are able to be close to the audience, to explain, to take time. And that leads me to another key subject for me. You see here an helicopter. Why? Because I think the future leaders need to be feet on the ground, with the capacity to lift, to be a little bit upper, of course, but not always in the sky like an airplane. Otherwise, they are disconnected. Let's go back to Sophie. What did she tell me? Did she tell me yesterday, this young, witty girl studying at Oxford? She told me when I asked her, what would be the leader of your dream? Or what would you tell to a leader if you were a speechwriter like me? What would you expect since you are 19 and you are the future? And she said, I would expect someone genuine. I would expect someone with a vision and true to his or her vision. I would expect that words and acts coincide. So how can we, speechwriters, help our leaders? We're serving, we're helping, we're empowering to be these people. Well, I think we have to be very much into common sense. And if I had tips or things that come to my mind, I would say, first, know the field. Go out of your office as much as you can. Alan, where are you? We had a chat this morning. Yes, Alan, you told me that sometimes at 3 o'clock, you walk your dog. You're so right. You need to go out to think all the time. Otherwise, you lose your spirit when you stay in a little place without air and without window. If you are disconnected, your leader will be disconnected. Trust me on that, and you know it by heart. Second, of course, to make them being grounded, being there, we have to listen to what the audience says. Take the most relevant of it, but use it to make better speeches. Third, we have, of course, to have one foot in, one foot out. Yes. What does it mean? I'm almost done. It means that I think we have to remain independent, at least in our spirit. Why? Because otherwise, we run the risk to be disconnected, extremely technical. Fourth, we have to fight against what? Against Kent. Is it clear for everyone, Kent? I learned that word a few hours ago. When I say that, I mean langue de bois. Have you heard of that? You know those concepts, those words everyone use all the time without knowing what it means? Like pre-digested words or fashionable words? Be very aware of that. Be very skeptical. Don't put that into your leader's tongue, because then they are disconnected. And of course, we have to convince them to train and train and train again, because they need, like Usainbolt, like Steve Jobs, to take time to make our words their words and to embody them. Because if it's not embodied, it's so vulgar, it's so impersonal. It doesn't work, it's fake. So yes, we have to do that. And last but not least, I think if we are isolated, we die. We will die, like dinosaur dying.
Because we need to work together. We need to listen to each other. We need to share experience. And that's why I give you a big kiss, Brian. Because thanks to you, I'm going out of my office and I love it. Thanks to you, I can speak to other human people. And it's not every day. Thanks to you, we have the opportunity to share. And it's very, very important. So that's what I wanted to tell you, Schatz. And I'm done. Thank you.